भगवति वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भक्ति वासुदेवाय
We are reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, the history of the life of Ajamil, text number 52. The Yamadutas are continuing to explain their worldview, their perspective on things.
Dehi
Ashna
Ajitta
Shat
Vargaha Na Ichchan Karmani Karyate Koshakaraha Iva Atmanam Karmana Achadya Muhyati Dehajno Chitta Shatbhargo Nichchan Karmani Karyate Koshakara Ivatmanam Karmanachadya Muhyati He has no jitta satvargo.
He has no jitta satvargo.
Nichchan karmani karyate.
Nichchan karmani karyate.
Koshakara ivatmanam. Karmanat. Excuse me. Karmanachadya mukhyati.
Karmanachadya mukhyati.
Dehasno jitta shatvargo.
Dehasno jitta shatvargo.
Chin karmani karyate.
Karmani karyate.
Nichchan karmani karyate. Koshakarya ivatmanam. Karmanachchaja muhyati.
Karmanachchaja muhyati.
De yacha jita sadvargo.
De yacha jita sadvargo.
Satchamuyati,
Satchamuyati,
Dehi.
Dehi.
The embodied soul.
The embodied soul.
Ajnaha.
Ajnaha.
Without perfect knowledge.
Without perfect knowledge.
Ajitta Shatvargaha.
Ajitta Shatvargaha.
Who has not controlled the senses of perception. And the mind. Na-ichchan.
Na-ichchan.
Without desiring.
Without desiring.
Karmani.
Karmani.
Activities for material benefit.
Activities for material benefit.
Kāyate.
Kāyate.
Is caused to perform.
Is caused to perform.
Koshakaraha.
Koshakaraha.
The silkworm.
The silkworm.
Iva.
Like
Atmanam, himself. Karmana, by fruitive activities. Achchadya, covering. Mukhyati, becomes bewildered. Translation: the foolish, embodied, living entity, inept at controlling his senses and mind, is forced to act according to the influence of the modes of material nature against his desires. He's like a silkworm that uses its own saliva to create a cocoon and thus becomes trapped in it with no possibility of getting out. The living entity traps himself in a network of his own fruitive activities and then can find no way to release himself. Thus he's always bewildered, and repeatedly he dies. Sri Prabhupada's purport, as already explained, the influence of the modes of nature is very strong. The living entity entangled in different types of fruitive activity is like a silkworm trapped in a cocoon. Getting free is very difficult unless he's helped by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ma om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gaudavani Pucharane Vishesha Sundavari Pucharane Sutarane Oma Gyanam Timuram Dasya Dhananjana Salakaya Chaksuru Miritim Jeva Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Pancha Kalpatri Vishcha Kata Sindhu Vyeva Chakta Kutanam Bhavane Vyo Vaishya Vyo Namo Namaha. So they are continuing. The people over whom they have jurisdiction, because they're asked, you know, they've already replied who may have jurisdiction over basically all fruitive actors, then of course specifically those who have committed sinful activities and have been witnessed by a whole list of observers. So here the Dehi, the embodied soul. Dehi means one who has a deha, a body, the embodied. So it just means the embodied, but they always say the embodied soul, Dehi, who is Ajnaha, fool, without knowledge, doesn't know what's going on, is ignorant, and as a consequence, Ajitta Shatvarga, is not conquered. Ajitta, Ajitta means one who's conquered, but Ajitta is not conquered. The six varga, sense gratifying agents here, meaning the five knowledge acquiring senses and the mind. The mind is also considered a sense. It's listed that way. We've already had a description yesterday of the whole mechanism of karmic involvement of the body, the analytical study of this by the Yamabhutas. And so one has not conquered these things. He performs karmani, activities for sense gratification. not, it's done, even if he doesn't want to. He's propelled. He's pushed. He's pushed like this. Karyate is cause to perform, karmani. And so now compared to koshakara iva atmanam, he's like a koshakara, one who makes a sheaf, meaning the silkworm. All moths, butterfly, they have these stages where they, first they're a caterpillar, and then they have a gland that produces some kind of silk, and then they wrap themselves in their cocoon, and then in that cocoon they undergo their transformation and come out a moth or a butterfly. This is it. So here, the living entity is compared to a worm in a cocoon, because what's the resemblance? The worm makes his own cocoon. He has a silk gland. You've seen them, maybe, and you saw these movies in school or something. They bend down and they pull it out and they wrap themselves up. Or you can even watch them on your back porch if you care to. So he makes his own cocoon. So the living entity, by his own actions, is entrapped like this by his fruitive activities. And then, even if he doesn't desire, he continues in this way. Mukhyati, bewildered. Because of that bewildered, he cannot release himself. Prabhupada says, and repeatedly he dies. Doesn't know how to get out. Prabhupada's purport here is pretty much same as the last purport, where it's been discussed. You how helpless he cannot overcome material nature. Prabhupada quoted the last purport: "Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya duratya." This energy of mine, it's my energy. He claims it is his because it's Daivi, it comes from Deva. So it's his energy, Gunamayi, made of the three modes of material nature, and very difficult to overcome. You actually cannot cross it by your own effort. By using material means, you cannot escape material nature. You may notice, here's an idea of getting more and more entangled by all our efforts to escape. Because basically, fruited as living entities, they also want to escape material nature. They want to control material nature, so not be controlled by her. So you'll see that all the efforts of technological advancement are usually dedicated to becoming free from the control of material nature. It's cold out, so to some extent you have to do it. So it's cold outside, but we are warm inside. Or if it's warm, hot outside, you can be cool inside. But we always envisioned, at least when I was a child, they had... There was a lot of promises in the 1950s in America that pretty soon we'll have climate control, that you'd be able to get up and dial, you know, put in your request, and there'd be so much rain and so much sunshine, and they were planes to go up and see the clouds, and they were raining, and people, well, they had imagined vast cities under a bubble, and the climate was always controlled. And so on. The only cities like that now are like Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's very cold there. And so basically the city has become one gigantic underground mall. So you become a troglodyte. You live underground like an animal, a burrowing animal. That's how you escape the cold. It'll cover it with glass. So all these attempts are there to control material nature. But Paul Krog remarks, I think in his pamphlet on chanting Hare Krishna, maybe his where he says that the more one tries to control material nature, the one more becomes entangled in in reactions. You actually get more controlled by her. And you therefore you get in so many cases the opposite result. All this climate control has led to global warming. You just postponed your problems until now. It's at a stage where some say it's too late to do anything about it. I was just reading some review of a book where it's going to say the human population is it's too late to do anything about it. And the human population is probably going to be reduced to about 200 million people living somewhere up in the Arctic Circle and maybe England, you know, and so on, because of the global warming. Because things are happening that are making things accelerate. The melting of the Siberia permafrost is releasing huge amounts of trapped methane gas into the atmosphere. These different things are happening, which maybe people sometimes think are happening really, really fast. Still, they're thinking they could control it. I mean, I read one account where some people are proposing basically putting big Venetian blinds in outer space. You know, you have these gigantic things where you can tilt the and control the amount of heat that goes through. I'm sure somebody's going to suggest floating white plastic, huge islands of white plastic in the Arctic to reflect the sunlight. So they'll try things like that. Actually, already in the 60s, in the 70s, as a result of this, what do you call it? There was a gas crisis, an energy crisis then. It was the first time people were lining up at pumps. And at that time, people were thinking this is just a harbinger of things to come. We're entering into an era of scarcity, and there are limits to growth. And there was this think tank called the Club of Rome that was talking about what to do and when there's limits to growth. And this upset a whole lot of people who basically said there's unlimited growth. And some company was sending out these brochures that I used to get in the mail that pointed out that the problems of technology have always been solved by more technology. And it said that, you know, when cavemen, these alleged cavemen, built fires in their caves and they smelled the smoke, did they just say, oh, we can't have fire? No, they built chimneys so the smoke went out, you know. So so they solved it. So that this is their thing, that whatever problems are caused by technology can only be solved by more technology. But anyway, we see that these things are beginning to pile on. We may have ended the era from freedom from disease temporarily, because you know in the 1940s penicillin became available, and people thought that was the end of infectious diseases. It was all over. My mother, who was in the Army Nurse Corps during World War II, told me the story about when she was in a hospital and some airman, was in the hospital and he was dying of pneumonia. And everybody knew when you got pneumonia like that, you died. He was going to be dead in 2 days. And everybody knew it, the whole hospital staff, that this is what was going to happen. And then their first little vial of penicillin arrived. Had ever seen it, and she said people were treating it like gold, and they all, a whole group of people, trooped into the room while they administered this airman this dose of penicillin, and then a day later he was alert, talking, completely in a state of recovery. And she said people were crying and everything. And they just said, okay, this is it, you know, we won. we've eliminated these infectious diseases. But then, of course, we know what happened. They got used so much, and the bacteria, whatever, developed resistance to them, and then new diseases pop out that. It was almost like a Bhagavatam purport, because even when we were reading Prabhupada's purports for the first time, how there would always be disease, I mean, it almost seemed to people counterfactual. No, we've conquered all these diseases. I mean, I talk about this a lot because people have seen that. But I had read a book, actually, when I was an undergraduate called The Mirage of Health, where some person who was up on the sociology of medicine already said that this was an illusion. But when Prabhupada said it, people just, because there was a war on cancer, polio had been just eliminated, so it was, this is not the end of it. But now the diseases are coming back, far more ferocious. There's some kind of staphylococcus going around that's resistant to the most potent antibiotics now. And even that was first found in hospitals, but now it's being found outside hospitals. In South Africa, there's a virulent form of tuberculosis that resists all kinds of drugs.
Leprosy.
Uh-huh. And then leprosy is having, anyway, there's so many things are having a comeback. And all of these things are really the result of technology. Cause for the problem, so therefore you get more entangled. They want to conquer disease. They want to conquer basically birth, death, old age, and disease. They want to become, in effect, liberated. But the Prophet has pointed out that this is what the demons want. They want to live forever in this body. That's the demonic, to make this body immortal. And so people are trying to do it. They're really desperately trying to stay young. I understand there are television programs now, Extreme Makeover, where these people go on to plastic surgeons and they do this whole kinds of things and you know.
I thought it was houses.
Huh?
I thought Extreme Makeover was houses. People?
No, they do that with houses too. No, they do it with people, right? Don't they?
Huh?
They're both. Yeah, they're both. On the airplane, I saw a screen makeover for a house with this team of people. It's like your dream come true. You've got this old ruddy house, and this team of perky people descend on you, and like demigods or something, and they tear your house up. This has to go, and they're crowbars, and you know, and you come back a week. Yeah.
If you move that far.
Yeah, that's right, they come on the bus. So. Anyway, you know, they do this, there's plastic surgery shows where they do this with people. There's a real downside to all this plastic surgery, which you read about occasionally. Because it doesn't, many times it doesn't work like it's supposed to. People should always be always disappointed with the results of surgery. But anyway, this is the. I know if whatever problems now, we'll solve them later. We're improving. But you are entangled and you cannot conquer. By material means, you cannot conquer material nature. You simply become more entangled in her complexities. Modern industrial civilization is a long-term result of this kind of thing. So people are trying to do, in one sense, the right urge to get free from material nature. But the method they're going about it, they want to conquer material nature, but they're here ajitta satvarga. They cannot conquer their own senses. They run whole countries, but their own minds are wild. They're berserk. Here are subtle body. This will be discussed a little later on about the subtle body, because we have these two bodies, and really the one that one really has to worry about is the subtle body, because the gross body is a manifestation of the subtle body. And at the time of death, we lose the gross body. But we don't lose the subtle body unless we're liberated. But liberation means liberation from the subtle body. Otherwise, again, you can contract another gross body. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita, a certain kind of mouth or snout of the Bhaskas, a certain kind of eyes, many eyes, two eyes, eye spots, different sorts of paws or claws or feet, hands or pinchers. It all depends what you're doing. If you actually look at different bodies and see their expressions of material desires, that's why spiders are really horrifying. All these
spiders,
for example, that's a person who has that mentality. It's a predator mentality. We're always happy. You know, they have these horror movies where the giant guy gets shrunk and the spiders get big. Where they see just how bad they are. So these are all expressions of subtle bodies. And Kapila says devotional service dissolves the subtle body of the living entity. So the path of becoming free from this is ultimately, as it says, surrender to me, then you can cross over. The efforts to cross over by your own, even if you know where to look, you really know, I have to conquer the mind. If I really want to get in control, then I have to control my own mind. And therefore yogis and jnanis, they try to do that. Again, using their own efforts to try to become liberated or try to become supreme. It's really amazing how much in Indian traditional theology, I guess you call it theology, philosophy, the aim is power. Munis have more power than kings. And this is manifest in abilities to control material nature. The yoga cities and things like that. It's another way of going to get power. People don't know about it. But it's been pointed out, and we call them miracles, walking on water, which is Lagama Siddhi. But it's been pointed out by no less an authority than Arthur C. Clarke, a science fiction writer, that any sufficiently advanced technology looks like a miracle. And Prabhupada said that about miracles. He said, miracle means you don't know how it's done. And now this is also within the realm of material nature. It's just another kind of power. So these sages in the forest and so on, they also are, in many cases, power junkies like anybody else. And they like to exercise it. Indra feels threatened by them. It's about controlling material nature. Interesting, like Durvasa Muni, they have so much of these powers, but also they can't control themselves because they get notoriously short-tempered, easily angered. Gets into trouble. So this is very difficult. Even if you take this means of trying to perform austerities and actually, just like Hiranyakashipu, he was also a power junkie. What was his method? It looked like it was yoga, really, to stand on his tiptoes and perform these severe austerities and so on. So these people, although they have to some extent control of their senses, still their minds are not in control. He gets furious at Prahlad. They can't become they're ashanta. They are not peaceful, even though What's it say? It's in the Chaitanya. Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kama Sakale Ashanta. Those who are after Bhukti Mukti or Siddhis, they're all not peaceful. But a Krishna Bhakta, devotee of Krishna, that person becomes. Because the devotee, he is released from the bondage of material nature by Krishna. It's true that we also have a process to go through of controlling vacho vega, manasakoda vega, jiva vega, udarapasta vega. We also have to control these sense gratifying agents. But ultimately we control them through the grace of Krishna. And the point of sadhana or regular devotional practice, abhyasa yoga, is to convince Krishna that we are interested. That's really what it is. That we want his mercy. We want to come back to him. We don't want to come back to Krishna. Krishna says, you think you can do it yourself? I'm hands off. Go ahead. You think you're God? You think you are the super soul? And then untie your own knots. But they become more entangled. Those who are bound cannot release themselves, nor can other people who are bound release those who are bound. Only the unbound can free the bound. And that's Krishna, or Krishna's agents. But when Krishna's agents are doing something, it's really Krishna. The agents mean they're operating through these people. So therefore, if one is serious, one has to ultimately go to Krishna. By going to Krishna, one gets to the root of the problem. All these other methods of trying to control material nature, of trying to become free, you don't really get to the root. It's like chopping down weeds and they perversely grow up again the next year because the root is still there underground. And you have to uproot the root cause. And the root cause, as Prabhupada has explained so many times, is that one has to come to terms with Krishna, to reinstate one's relationship with Krishna, which is called surrender. Surrender is an interesting thing because really there's nothing to surrender. One is actually already surrendered. Because we may notice how we're controlled by material nature. We're controlled, it is our nature. We are under the control of a higher power. So actually we are in one way or another under control of this external nature. This is how we are being controlled. Directly by Krishna. Otherwise, it's asked here. When Krishna says in this verse that the living entity cannot overcome this daivihi esha bhunamayi, my divine energy, which is made of the three modes. So how is that when the living entity is para prakriti? And the material nature is upper property. The living entity is higher than material nature. So how can material nature control the living entity? So Prabhupada answers in the purport to this verse that it's actually not the material nature that's controlling the living entity. It's Krishna through material nature. Material nature is this Durga Devi. And she's very powerful. She has 10 hands or arms, and those arms all have weapons. And she's riding a lion or a tiger. Which is it anyway? Which I think is really a lion.
I've heard it said that sometimes they say tiger, sometimes lion.
But I think it's all really a lion. Really and truly a lion. If you go back and check it out. I think lions disappeared from India and the tigers are rare. So. But anyway, I think it's really a lion.
I've heard
I've seen both too. But anyway, whatever it is, she's riding a lion or a tiger. And you see the paw, forepaw of the tiger. And there's a little guy under there. That's the materialist. And actually, she has the trident is right over there. That trident means Adibhauta Gadi Daivi Gadi Atmika, the three kinds of miseries. And she's strong. She's very strong. But we see that the people in this world who are trying to be strong and powerful, they cannot conquer material nature because they say, you know, they like this philosophy, I'm strong and you're weak, the weaker vessel goes to the wall. So people are in this struggle to become powerful because the strong are in control. They control the weak, they utilize the energy of the weak for their own purposes. And they're very much against well, this is not fair. And we have to handicap the strong so it will be a level playing field. The weak don't deserve to be weak, and the strong, they must have done something bad to be strong, so we have to level it all out. You see, we see there's social injustice, and we see this is going on in the world, that the strong and the weak. And so people who want to fix things, they either want to handicap the strong or empower the weak somehow or other. This is all going on. But actually, Prabhupada points out that it is the law of nature that the strong controls the weak. But you see the people that think they're strong, Durga Devi is actually stronger. And so they're like this. But then Durga, it says that she is ashamed to even stand in front of Krishna, before Krishna. She is really weak. So who's actually strong? Krishna's strong. That's who's strong. So that's what, if we really accept the philosophy that the strong control the weak, we have to acknowledge that the only one who's strong is Krishna. And besides Krishna, everybody else is weak. And therefore we surrender to Krishna. One surrenders to Krishna, and surrender means, Kim Clara, I'm your servant. What do you want me to do? Whatever your order is, that I obey. My actions are no longer dictated by the urges of the senses and the mind. They're simply dictated by your order. Either your order directly or as conveyed to me by your agents. But whatever your order is, that I do. That way I become controlled by Krishna. So this is how one steps. Actually, it's very, in some sense, it's very simple to step out of the control of the external potency and into the control of the internal potency. When we're controlled by the internal potency, then we are surrendered to Krishna. What do you want me to do? So it's simply that our actions become dictated by the order of Krishna. And I simply say, what do you want me to do? And you say it to Prabhupada, he had no hesitation at all. He knew exactly what you're supposed to do. Never will. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. Chant on the beads, chant 16 rounds a day, follow the book. Everything is there. What we should do? Serve Krishna's devotees. Ask them what they want. Serve them. Because Krishna has a project going on in the material world. His current project is the one initiated by Mahaprabhu. And so we know what makes Mahaprabhu happy. Mahaprabhu is made happy when conditioned souls are being saved in the process of Sankirtan. This is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a chapter where Mahaprabhu is depicted as a gardener in high anxiety, because he's planted this tree, which is the tree of the Sankirtan movement, which is growing like crazy and spreading all over the world. And the fruit is coming in, and Mahaprabhu is begging, who's going to help me harvest this fruit? This is such a bountiful harvest is coming. I'm just one person. What can I do? Who will help me? Who will save all these people? So there's what he wants. So that's how Prabhupada knows what Krishna wants, is basically what has Mahaprabhu taught us. That's the Yuga Dharma. If it was another age, then the mission might be different, but we know what his mission is, and we know very, very clearly what he wants, what will please Krishna. And so, Kimkara. Kimkara means servant, but the literal meaning is what? One who says what? But as in, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Become all. Then we're under the control of the internal focus. Then that means not under the control of material nature anymore. And when that happens, then the residual effects of so many lifetimes of material entanglement, they become cleared away. Maybe different speeds, different ways, but they gradually become cleared away. One is released. One is just simply by that stepped out of the external potency and into the internal potency. And actually, even though if I'm serving the order of Krishna, the order of the spiritual master, very diligently, even though there may be coming from my body and mind the impulses to do other things, if I don't follow them, I am, for all practical purposes, liberated. All my actions are liberated, even though the mind, I'm engaged sufficiently in the positive activities of Krishna consciousness, then I do not follow the dictations from the body and the mind, the dictations of the material nature. We have to do this to show Krishna that we are sincere and serious, and then Krishna will take care of all the rest. But it is Krishna actually who himself saves us. There's the Lord Nrisimhadev in the heart who uproots the desire to enjoy in the world. This is called in the Bhagavatam Karmasha. Deep-rooted desire to enjoy fruitive activities. Nrisimhadev can take care of the Hiranyakashipu in the heart. That's what we have to do. So otherwise, we are just simply, by all our efforts to get out of this cocoon, we will actually make it a thicker cocoon. When I was a kid, we had these little tubes of woven fabric or something. You put your fingers in, like straw, yeah. And then the more you pulled, the tighter it got. So you went the other way, and it loosened up. So people who, by their own efforts, try to become free, so he gets trapped in a network of his own fruitive activities and can find no way to release himself. So this is the situation. Anyway, we'll go a bit more about this. We should see it just as we should always be seeing three lives. This life, the previous one, and the next one. We should be aware of at least three. What explains my current condition is my previous life. What I am doing now is creating my future life. So I shall always be conscious of that, not just those who only know about one. That's another sign of ignorance. And therefore they dedicate all their energy simply to becoming happy in this life. Make a miserable future for them. So the other thing is to see how material nature is working. Understand how we are embodied, how material nature controls, what the three modes are, to see the three modes at work, to understand myself or my own mind, be able to detect the symptoms of the mode of goodness, symptoms of the mode of passion, symptoms of the mode of ignorance, so that during the practice of devotional service, I should see that the symptoms of passion, ignorance are decreasing. And Prabhupada said in the lecture, if they're not, you're doing something wrong. If I'm doing something wrong, I should find out what it is I'm doing wrong by going to somebody who knows better and say, what do I do? We have all this information. Okay, comments or questions? Yeah?
Off topic, I just wanted you to announce that tonight, when they take rest at the clock, yeah, at 9 o'clock, turn it back to 8.
We're going to control time.
Yeah, we're going to control time. I'll try to.
These should go automatically.
Well, these need to be taken down mm-hmm. and put near a window, but don't pay attention to them because they go berserk. They change.
This is a Thomas watch.
Radio control. They change, and then sometimes the next day they change back. It's bizarre.
So we'll have Mangal. So we turn the clocks back tonight.
So
Mangalarti. You get an extra hour's sleep or japa time or whatever, however you want to use your extra free hour. You actually lost it earlier this year. Okay. Yeah.
You were talking about how people are getting sometimes an anxiety as a gardener.
Yeah.
Because of the growing mm-hmm. opportunities to serve. Sometimes we're observing another guru or teacher out of this time helping a dying person, and out of respect to not interfere, we just pray to Krishna, looking for that opportunity to give prasadam, to give the holy name, mm-hmm. and sometimes you wonder. Did I ever do that? Because now this person left for a body.
Mm-hmm.
So just by the desire alone, is there ever a chance if they didn't get prasad, if they didn't hear the Hare Krishna mantra, is there any chance just from the devotee's desire
sure.
to help?
Yeah, because basically the devotee's desire, we should get our desire to help people like this. Krishna, please help this person. I'm going to do everything I can, but I can't. You please help them. I think a great deal happens simply by the well-wishing, the good wishes of devotees. I'm sure that's how Prabhupada got so many people to become devotees. He said to Krishna, please save these people. And because Prabhupada had surrendered so much to Krishna and showed Krishna how much he was willing to do, Krishna said, okay, I know they're not qualified at all, but if you ask, what can I do? See, Krishna becomes controlled by the love of his devotees. Love is not a sentiment, it's something real, and that reality is exhibited in service and self-sacrifice. So when we demonstrate to Krishna our love for him, Krishna then becomes controlled. And Krishna says, you're doing so much for me, what can I do for you? Well, what does a devotee want? A pure devotee doesn't want anything for Krishna, but he wants to see other people. So then Krishna does things for him. So if you want to help people, we have to serve Krishna, so that Krishna will become obliged to us. So that when we wish people well, Krishna will actually say, okay, well, this person really is going to hell, and is not, this is, you know, this is, what, this is how the, this is how the Yamadutas get frustrated. You take away their business. You're not. You're really destined for hell, but somehow or other, good wishes of the devotees.
That's reassuring because you sometimes don't have a chance.
Yeah, sometimes you can't. You don't have a chance, but still, it's potent. Srila Prabhupada, he's.